You're listening to Alden and Reality, episode 393, our review of Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Dun, dun, dun.
Alternate Reality is a podcast about comics, comic-related media, and comic-related merchandise. We do reviews of all sorts, TV, video games, movies, and comic issues. So be warned, the following show material contains spoilers. If you have not read your books, seen the movies, played the games, so forth and so on, then you may want to stop the show until you have done so, or you can proceed at your own caution. You have been warned.
Hello and welcome to Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. My name is John.
And I'm Charlie.
And we're here to talk about all the things that have to do with comics and geekery. And this week we're talking about movies as we talk about the latest offering from Marvel Comics, Marvel Studios, in the world of movies. And that is Ant-Man and the Wasp that just came out this past weekend. So we look forward to talking about that. If you like our movie reviews, if you look back in the feed, you can still find our Avengers Infinity War movie review. It's still up, so you should go back and listen to that. That was a lengthy show. That was Charlie and my's first show back from a very, very, very long hiatus. And so that was like a two-hour episode. But that was a lot of fun. I want you guys to listen to that if you've not had a chance to, and we hope you enjoy what's on tap for tonight. And we should have other offerings coming in the future. We may talk about that in just a moment. Anything else, Charlie? Let's get right into the review then. We'll be back in just a second.
Dr. Pym, I actually heard what happened to you. You opened up the quantum realm. That's when this crazy creepy ghost who like walks through walls and stuff. Stole your tech. And now she wants to take over the world or whatever.
Who would have believed that in your hour of need, you would turn to us?
Not me.
Because I mean, we robbed you. Do you remember? That's us.
Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast, bringing you the best in movie reviews. And now we're talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp. All right, so this movie, if you're a little confused on the timeline...
I was a little confused on the timeline.
...takes place prior to the events that occurred in Avengers Infinity War. All right, so, you know, if you're like, wait a minute, why does the world look like nothing's wrong? Why is everybody still walking around? Why isn't everybody turned to ash? It's because that didn't happen yet. That's still to come chronologically. Okay. By the way, spoilers for Ant-Man and the Wasp. We're going to talk about what happens in the...
Want to start that again?
No. We're fine. Let's just go with it. So, this movie is about what really happens to...
An hour and a half long. Hello!
This movie really is about kind of what happens to Scott post-Civil War. And how he got in trouble for helping Captain America. And he's been 2 years on house arrest. Because apparently he violated the Sokovia Accords. He was going to go to federal prison for humongous amounts of time. That somehow or another got plead down to house arrest for 2 years. So he's been stuck in his house for 2 years wearing an ankle bracelet. He's had no contact with Hank Pym or Janet Van Dyne. And so he's just been stuck there for 2 years. But he's been able to see his daughter. And for the most part, he's been kind of happy. And he's helping his friends get their security business off the ground. You remember his friends from the first movie, the ones that were kind of skeezy and they're, you know, kind of into the larceny and all that stuff. And now they're trying to go legitimate.
Luis, the rapper and the internet guy.
Right.
So. It was the crazy weird Russian dude.
Yes. Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga.
Yeah. And which is odd because I just watched John Wick 2 over the weekend. And, of course, the Russians in there were talking about John Wick, and they call him Baba Yaga, or Baba Yaga. And I was like, oh, that's cool. It's the second time in the same weekend I've seen that reference. You've not seen John Wick? No, okay. Well, lots of people have.
Okay.
If you like the Keanu...
Good for them.
If you like the Keanu Reeves, and you like high action, it's a movie that offers that. All right. So, but anyway, that's a reference that's made in the movie. Anyway. So, So Scott's trying to just return to normal life. He's trying to put his superhero life behind him because he realizes that when he does that, he puts his family in jeopardy. He puts his relationship with his daughter in jeopardy. But as inevitably happens, he finds himself 3 days away from parole, 3 days away from getting out of house arrest, drawn back into this world. So that sets up, antics ensue as Hank and his daughter are trying to look for Michelle Pfeiffer in the quantum realm.
Because apparently he's been getting signals.
Telepathic signals or some such from her. And so they need his help to figure out where she's at in the quantum
realm. And I think that's... they're doing that... because they said in the first one, when he enters that realm, mm-hmm. you can clearly see a face there.
Right.
And everyone thought it was eternity.
Right.
Well, apparently they're retconning it in this... to where it was her.
Yeah.
They saw, Janet Van Dyne.
Right. So, oh, I said, what's their daughter's name in this movie?
Hope.
Hope, yeah. I said, he hasn't been contacted by Hank or Janet. I didn't mean to say Janet. I meant to say Hope.
He's lost all hope.
He's still got the hots for her, by the way, and apparently she still likes him, although she won't bring herself to admit it.
Well, apparently they had a thing going on that they didn't even show.
Yeah, it was past the movie, but before Civil War.
Yeah.
So... yeah, it was pretty intense based on some of the flashbacks we got. So, and Hank doesn't like it. He's like, every time he sees them together, he's like, "Will you two quit staring longingly into each other's eyes?"
You know what's crazy about this movie?
What was it?
Like the de-aging. Oh my God, it's getting so good.
It is getting amazing, right? Young Michael Douglas. I started to say Kirk Douglas, his dad. You see young Michael Douglas, young Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, they explain it to they're asking Hope, "Well, what do you remember about your mom?"
Right.
And she's like, "Well, I remember they went on, they used to take a lot of vacations without me."
Right. And it was them going off on some superhero trip. Right.
So she remembered that on their last occasion when she last saw her mom was like, when she was like 6.
Right.
So they flash back to that. And you see Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer walking down the hall.
You can't tell that it's not them from 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was amazingly good. That technology is really amazing.
I mean, it's like I said, like that and in Civil War where they DH Tony.
Right.
Or Kirk Douglas from Guardians of the Galaxy. Not Kirk Douglas.
You're talking about
Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell, yeah.
Yeah.
Where they de-aged him in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Well, we see that with Carrie Fisher in Rogue One. We see it with Peter Cushing. Their ability I know, okay, but they're working the kinks out, right? And my point is that...
because Peter Cushing was scary.
Okay.
Like, I don't care what you want to say. He was scary.
But the point is that they're working the kinks out, and you can see how far they've come with it. They're doing really amazing things with it. And somebody has said, not too long ago, that it will soon be to the place where you don't need actors. You will not need actors. Like, if they want to do a John Wayne movie, they'll just make a new John Wayne movie with a CGI John Wayne that you will not be able to tell the difference.
But like I said, I was like, oh my God, Michelle's looking pretty dang
good. You look like Catwoman, Michelle. That's amazing. Yeah.
Crazy.
So I agree. That was really good. All right, Charlie. So, I don't want to get into a big, huge rehash play-by-play of this whole movie. No, let's not.
Yes, please.
So what were the strong points? What did you like about this? You like the de-aging thing? What was the comedy good? Because this movie's one of those tongue-in-cheek, more comedic movies.
I thought the first one was funnier.
I did too, and I thought
some of the jokes they used in this one were kind of rehashed to the point.
Right.
That they were almost like awful.
Right. So one of the ones
like nails on a chalkboard awful, like when he's naming the ants.
Oh yeah. Antonio Banderas. Yeah.
It's like, oh God, really?
Yeah. So there's that. The part that I found particularly off-putting is the scene where the Hispanic guy does the recap of something that happened before, just like the last movie, only this time it wasn't nearly as funny.
No.
And when they did the characters actually talking with his voice instead of their own voice, that was so original and brand new and amazing in the first movie, and that they failed to recapture it. It just didn't.
I kind of liked it because, like, where him and where he was doing Paul Rudd, and
yeah,
he's like, "Hey, girl, what's up?" And she's like, "Nothing. You want to make out?" And they just start going at it. I thought that was funny.
It wasn't, you know. I don't think it was as good as it was in the first one.
I think they put the best bits in the trailer.
Yeah.
For this movie, I really did.
Well, yeah, like because Hello Kitty Pez dispenser and all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
And the Bill Foster stuff,
mm-hmm.
where they're comparing sizes.
Yeah.
I mean, by the time you see it 20 times, and then you go in this movie, and you're just like,
yeah, okay. There that is. Yeah. That's we've seen that in the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think they used their best material in the trailer.
So,
I mean, some of the action scenes were great.
All right, so, yeah, well, they are, really. The driving scenes where they're eluding and they're shrinking and they're getting bigger and all that stuff, they were really good.
I think that, like...
Although some of the physics with that are a little wonky.
Yeah, for comedy, I think they could have done a better job of it. But it was fine.
Yeah.
I like the action of it, not really the comedy of it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought one of the better parts was the whole the factory. Wherever they put the factory is wherever it would just be. Even though I don't get how the elevator would work then.
Yeah.
Because if the elevator's going down, what's it going down into?
I don't know.
Because they Hope kidnaps Paul Rudd.
Uh-huh.
Scott Lang.
Right.
He kidnaps her in the when they find out. They've apparently been monitoring Scott for a while.
Right.
And when he calls them after this, he falls asleep in the bathtub and he sees Janet in a dream.
Right.
And he calls, he finds the phone that he's hidden away, which, you know, if you're, what is it, Homeland Security or whatever it is that mm-hmm. they're dealing with in this movie?
Right. Well, it's S.H.I.E.L.D., I
S.H.I.E.L.D.
guess.
S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't exist anymore.
Well, what has took the place of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't know.
Well, either way, they come through his house, like, every time he breaks his monitor, which... That's kind of
how,
like,
many times did they break the door face off his door? He just shattered.
Well, that was another thing. I was like, is he buying new doors every time that happens?
Because,
but they said every time that he goes out of the house, they gotta go check the house. They right. gotta
make sure
and
no
they
contraband
up and down.
Right.
Well, I'm like, what? Wouldn't they have found that phone like beforehand?
You would think, unless he's got it really well hidden. Did it show where he had it?
Yeah.
Where was it?
It was just like in a wall socket. He just takes the wall socket out and.
Oh.
Reaches his hand in it.
Yeah, they should have found it.
And I was like, they couldn't have found that, really?
Yeah, the FBI's not as good as they used to be.
Anyway, like, she kidnaps him, which is funny because the way she does it is she turns into the wasp and uses her little wasp stinger.
Yeah, a little wasp stinger, and it knocks him out.
And Paul Rudd just, like, gets knocked out, and he wakes up, and he's in a van, and they're going to...
back to headquarters.
Yeah. God, I can't think of his name now. Van Dyne.
Hank Pym.
Hank Pym, yeah. So Hank, to Hank's headquarters, factory thing. Well, they get there and like, they get in an elevator and they go down to a lab. I assume it's down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't.
I always assumed it was just on the ground floor. It doesn't make any sense that there would be a down.
Oh, would you just hide a big laboratory like that in the middle of the building?
Well,
if you're trying to be secret about it?
Well, if you can shrink the building, sure.
But that's the thing. You don't know that they could shrink the building.
Not
you're
at first.
Not supposed to.
Right, but I imagine
like I said,
that when they're not coming in and going out, I imagine they're keeping it shrunk most of the time.
Well, that's the thing. It's like they go into that and they use the elevator. Like I said, I assume they went down. I was like, well, how would that work if they can shrink the thing and just carry it with them?
You know what's weird is, like, this It's kind of like Inception. They had things inside things inside things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the quantum realm projector, if you want to call it that, like Phantom Zone projector, is inside the building. Well, they shrink the building down to tiny.
Uh-huh.
But before they did that, he had gone into the quantum realm and shrank himself down to tiny. So then he got shrunk to tiny, and then the building he was in got shrunk to tiny. Does that make him tinier? I don't know. And then Hank can't come back from the quantum realm because there's no place to come back to because the building's tiny. So he has to
wait. No, he lost the signal.
But he did. But
like the building was emitting a Wi-Fi signal or right. something to bring him back. That's how they were.
But he can't find it. Yeah. Until the building gets re-enlarged. But if he could find it, he couldn't come out in the building. He'd bust the building apart.
No.
Or would he just be miniature inside the building?
He'd have been miniature inside the building.
Mind blown. I don't know.
But no, that was kind of the weird thing. It's like, in the first movie, Scott goes in there, right? And they don't exactly say it's difficult to breathe or live there.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I didn't but think there would be any oxygen on that level. So, but at one point, Hank takes his mask off.
But what I'm saying is, that's what I'm saying. Scott didn't seem to have any problem when he was shrunk down to that size.
Right.
And came back. But then again, in this movie, they're like, well, you just can't live in that kind of thing. But then again, Janet's been there for...
Well, it's clearly had an effect.
35, 40 years.
Right. They talk about it almost like a deep sea diver, like coming back up, you'll get the bends or something yeah. like that. But, like I said, Janet had acclimated to it and had now got weird powers. Like, she just was able to touch this ghost character and cure her of her problems, or at least stabilize her temporarily.
Is it me, or was she super hot?
Well, you liked her better than I did. She was interesting, but I didn't...
I thought she was cute.
But,
Well, that's the thing. It's like, okay, they figure out they need to find where Janet is, right?
Right.
So they go to Bill Foster.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny because...
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, Lawrence Fishburne. It's kind of funny because he's, like, there teaching at college, and, like, they come in, and they're like, well, no one's going to notice we're here, and all they're wearing is, like, hats and, like...
Sunglasses.
And Scott's like... These are the worst costumes ever.
He says, nobody's going to recognize us. We look like us in hats and sunglasses.
I thought that was funny. But they go meet Bill because they got to make this thing to figure out how to find Janet.
Apparently, Hank Pym has ticked off everybody he's ever worked with. Like, nobody likes this man. The S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't like him. Bill Foster doesn't like him. His wife wasn't crazy about him. Just... Yeah.
Well, the thing is, they figure out that, like, they need a piece of old technology.
Right.
Like, an old suit. And Scott is already told...
That he destroyed the old suit.
Yeah, he destroyed it. But turns out he lied.
Right.
But in the process of this, we meet Boyd Crowder.
Yeah, from the Justified series.
From Justified, who's... someone said it the best on Twitter earlier... That he's doing his best Gary Oldman impersonation.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. From, like, every other movie that Gary Oldman's in.
Ever been in.
Like, where he's a bad cop or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Spot on. And that's when they meet Ghost for the first time. And Ghost can phase and is immaterial.
Right.
Well, it turns out she is affected by a quantum phase-shifting thing.
Right.
And that really kind of makes her character empathetic, supposedly.
Right, because it's not her fault, and if she doesn't get it fixed, she's going to die.
Yeah.
Which is why she's resorted to criminal activity to try and fix her problem. So you got competing interests. You got Hank and
Bill Foster
has agreed to
help
her.
In a turn of events. I was like, really? They're going to make him the bad guy? But I guess it worked out in the end because he wasn't really being bad.
Yeah, and he even told her, said, if you cross this line, we're through. I won't help you anymore. So he was willing to help her up to it. As long as he was sticking it to Hank Pym, he was fine with it. But when you start putting people in danger, it was too much.
But what I'm saying is she was a trained killer.
Yeah, what did you expect?
By the government. And I think that was funny, too. Of course, the U.S. government used her.
Yeah. Oh, my God, you've got phasing ability? Have you ever killed anybody?
Because you'd be a good secret agent. We're going
to
turn
Would you like to?
But that's the thing. It's like, how many times in these movies are they going to retcon when the superpowers showed up?
What do you mean?
Captain America was the first Avenger, right?
Right,
first
sure.
person to have superpowers. Never mentioned another one until Tony Stark.
Right.
And then when Tony Stark...
Well, it's not a superpower, it's technology, but anyway.
Either way, another person
hero.
Who did this sort of thing. And that's when Nick Fury comes in and goes, hey, I want to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative.
Right.
So at that point, we know that there are other people.
Mm-hmm.
At that point.
Right.
Not like there have been individuals beforehand.
That had powers or technology or whatever. Yeah, because Pym should have been doing his thing in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And then we're going to find out in Captain Marvel that she was
doing her thing in the 90s. Yeah. So.
So it's just like, really?
Well, the idea was in the...
When's the retconning going to quit, you know?
Yeah. Well, in Iron Man, the idea was that Iron Man showing up gave Nick Fury the idea of putting together a super team. Like, you know, he's good at this. There might be others like him. I should try to put together a team. But the idea that Nick Fury's been working with superpowered individuals for years blows that all to pieces. So,
but then again, it's like, okay, if they do a Fantastic Four, are they going to retcon them to be adventurers from the 60s?
That would be cool. Which would, because the idea is already blown anyway, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So, but like, have them be adventurers from the 60s that gets... Lost in Time or something.
But then again, there was never no mention of them.
Right.
Like, could they just not, if they think they're going to be able to do it, just seed it a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Just like, hey, guys, you know what? You might want to say, hey, yeah, there was this paper written by the scientist back in the 60s. Don't even mention his name.
Right.
Who was working with...
Cosmic rays?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, rays outside of the universe, you know, something like that. Just like go through that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get the Fantastic Four, fine. It was just a...
Just an offhanded mention. Yeah. Might not have meant anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then again, it's like, but if you're going to like go, hey, here's the Fantastic Four. They were a bunch of astronauts in the 60s who disappeared.
During the Apollo missions.
And they just showed up today with superpowers, you know, it's going to be a little weird. But I kind of like the idea that be like if they were from today. I mean, I think they could do it. Because I think the way that... I think Captain America, even though it was a 40s movie, felt very modern.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they shot it that way...
Right.
It could be like the 60s... A modern take on it.
Well, as long as they're not spending a lot of time on the street with people walking around with flower powered shirts on and things like that, just keep it in the lab mostly, you know, and in space on the space shuttle and stuff like that, then that would be okay. The thing is, what are they going to do in the first movie? Is the first, if we have a Fantastic Four movie, in the first movie, is it going to be them coming back from being lost and you'll get a little backstory about how they got lost? Or will the first movie be them in the 60s? And how they get similar to Captain America. And they get lost at the end of it. And the last thing you see is them waking up today. And if that's the case, what time period is Doom in? Because is Doom in the 60s or is Doom now? And does Doom come from the past with them?
He would kind of have to if you're relating everything back to the 60s.
So,
but if you're not, you could just like...
I tend to think that's not what they'll do. I tend to think that if they do a Fantastic Four movie, they'll probably just do it for today.
Well, what I'm saying is...
I like the idea.
You can shoot it that way. Like, you could shoot it like it's a today movie, but make it feel like a 60s thing.
Mm-hmm. So actually have it take place now, but just do nostalgic throwbacky things to make it remind you of the 60s.
Or just like... Like the outdated concepts, like the cosmic rays. I mean, come on. There have been people for decades going into space. No one's turned all elemental. Just do something weird and crazy. Well, like there was a weird shift after came in or whatever.
Oh, you can explain that 1,000 different ways. But I think you should continue calling it cosmic rays.
So that's what I'm saying.
But you know, what they
I'm
actually
saying is just don't say, hey.
No, it's not like
we're
once
explorers,
you get,
once we get out of Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah, we're bombarded with cosmic rays. Yeah, once you leave Earth's atmosphere, that's all there is
cosmic
rays.
What I'm
rays.
Saying is, you know, point it to where, like, after Thanos came in or after this big event happened.
Yeah, some kind of entity crossed paths with Earth orbit.
These
and
four, like, astronauts. Well, I don't know about having four of them, though.
The power cosmic. All you have to do is have a Herald of Galactus fly by the Earth, and in his trail, the cosmic rays rain down on him.
But then again, I don't want to, like, go into, like... But that's what I'm saying. I don't think you can have all four of them be astronauts.
Well, they were all in the book.
Well, but that was stupid even back then. You got three grown people with a teenager going into space? Really?
Okay, well, astronauts are trained military people.
Elon Musk doing personal flights into space. That's how you could do it. You could have someone funding their own, like, spaceship.
So you're
company.
Saying that Richards is this generation's Elon Musk in the Marvel Universe?
Yeah.
That would make him independently wealthy. I never got the sense that he was, even though the Baxter Building made bank because of all his inventions.
But
and
he
stuff.
Built. He owns a building in New York City, in the middle of New York City.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, fine.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He could be
they
like...
They just never talk about Richard's money. But he must be wealthy.
Yeah. He'd have to be. I mean, later on they weren't. I know that. But because I think he went more, oh, I'm doing it for
humanity
and everyone.
Yeah.
He didn't care.
Give it all away.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
There's your Iron Man origin all over again.
Right.
But then where he wasn't making weapons, he was
profiting
on his science.
And the way they tried to do it in the pitiful Fantastic Four movies we have had, is this an Ant-Man review or is this a Fantastic Four review?
Who cares?
But the way they did it and then the horrible movies we did have is that it was all Storm money that they worked for his dad, for Sue's dad, and that's where the big money came
from.
Yeah,
I don't care for that. I think I got a great idea.
Joe's like, I need to pitch this to somebody.
I need to write this down. But no, you understand. But to get back to what we're talking about, Ant-Man Wasp, it had some good things in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it could have been funnier.
Oh yeah, I do too.
I think some of the jokes were overused. I kind of like Jimmy Woo.
Yeah, he was nice. I liked
but
him.
But then I was like, would John really like Jimmy Woo, seeing as you read the Marvel Atlas Heroes?
I didn't like that book, though, so I like this version of him better.
But I was like, is he too jokey?
And he's a pastor.
A youth pastor.
A youth pastor. That's like,
well,
okay.
The funny thing I thought was like, which was totally like, the Iron Man, Tony Stark, going into the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier and saying, this guy's playing
Galaga.
Nobody think we noticed, but I did. And, like, he actually was. I think they did that with, like, the sleight of hand thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, they were like, oh. He's like, oh, how do you keep doing this? How do you keep disappearing? He's like, close-up magic. Like that. And then you later see Jimmy Woo, like,
he's in
on the
his
computer,
office, and he's learning how to
trying
do
to
it.
Learn the same thing.
So.
I don't think that, like I said, I don't think they did the shrinking or the growing large thing.
Very well. Well, do you mean like on screen didn't look right? Or
no,
just,
it
just wasn't used
just
well in the story?
It didn't seem like it was. Because, like, in Civil War, Scott was big.
Right.
And he was the same size in this, wasn't he?
I think he was bigger in this.
Well, either way, would he have gotten, like, that lightheaded and...
Yeah, I think he pushed himself too far in this one. I think... Because in Civil War, wasn't he, like, 65 feet? Wasn't that his maximum in Civil War? But not
well,
what
no,
he told?
He just said at his maximum height.
Right.
He was 65.
I think
feet.
In this one, he was like 85 or 90 feet, you know, to touch the bottom of the sea. And
but still.
So I just...
I mean, is it... It didn't seem right to me, like they just said, oh, when he's this big, he can't breathe. And when he's really tiny, nobody can breathe either.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what that's got to do with it. To me, the technology of size changing would be you don't change. Yeah. The world around you changes. That would be how it would look from your perspective.
Yeah.
So either you're the same you in a really small... The world is really big. Furniture's really big. Everything, cats and dogs, are really big. But you, from your perspective, look like the same you that you always were. Yeah. So why would you have any trouble breathing or anything?
I mean, I could almost imagine it when you go sub-nuclear.
Well, yeah, because if you're smaller than oxygen atoms,
yeah,
then how do you breathe?
Yeah.
All right, I get that.
But when you get big, it shouldn't affect you the same way.
Right. Unless you're a mile tall, then the air's thin up there. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But if you're just 75 or 80 feet tall, then you should be the same you always are. You're just you, but all the houses and cars are really small for some reason. It's like you're in Playland or something. Yeah, I agree. That doesn't kind of make any sense. A lot of the comedy in this movie, though, is physical comedy. Like when he is a slightly bigger version of Giant Man, and he's stopping that truck, but he's not the huge version we see later on.
Yeah, where he was skating.
Yeah, well, he turns it around and he uses it like a scooter, and he's
skateboard.
He's wheeling it. So a lot of the comedy is physical. You know, when he shrinks down in the school, but he gets stuck at about 3 feet.
And pretend he's like a little boy in the school.
Well, but he's smaller than any kid would be in that school.
He's way skinnier too.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, a kid in that school would be 4.5, 5 feet tall. He's like 3 feet tall. He would be like the smallest of the small. It's like a high school. Yeah. He's littler at that height than his daughter is, yeah. I think.
Well, because they even made the joke when he went to that little cubby hole to get the award where the old suit was.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't reach it.
Right.
And Janet, at her 5 feet or whatever, 5'3" or 5'4" or whatever.
Full size.
She could reach it quite well.
Right.
Well, yeah, he was jumping basically.
He didn't even come up to her hips.
Yeah.
I mean, he was tiny. And so the idea that they put a hoodie on him and he's just like a small kid and didn't... And then that one guy goes, "Hey, I need your pass." And he didn't think nothing of it. Like, oh my God, that's not a child. That's a...
weird alien.
That's a large dog or something. I don't know what that is. That would have... Yeah, that just kind of didn't work.
I don't think that would fly in a school anyway. Like, yeah. You see someone walk into a classroom, you go, forget it.
No, they would have to do something about that. They would be required to, I would think. So,
boy, I had to ring up the show.
So, I agree. A lot of the jokes fell a little flat, weren't as good. But the action, for the most part, was good. All right, let's talk about character performances. What did you think about Michelle Pfeiffer? We didn't see a ton of her. She mostly came in at the end of the movie.
I liked her in the flashback.
Yeah.
She was a little too weird and trippy in the continuity or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of funny when, like, she possessed Scott.
Right.
She's like, "Honey, it's me." And, like, it's like, "Yes, we need to do this and this and this." And
it's been so good since I've seen you.
And it almost looked like Scott...
and Hank.
Hank, we're going to kiss. And I was like, come on, do it. It'd be so funny.
And then Scott suddenly comes to himself, and it's him again, and they're holding hands. And I hear Scott was like, "This is weird. What are we doing?"
But I thought it'd been so funny if he just, like, kissed them each other.
Yeah.
And then, like, Hank had been, like, right before they kiss or something.
Well,
like,
and the moment their lips touch, Scott wakes up. And then he was like,
You know, that would have been funny, I think. Having the ants do everything was kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, the ants didn't play as big a part in this movie as they did the first one.
Well, they did.
No, but I mean, in the first one, they were vital to everything he tried to do. To getting into the facility, to stealing the yellow jacket suit, to everything. They had plans laid out, and the ants, and how he controlled the ants, and how it worked. It was all super important. In this one, the ants were just like backup. They just, you know, they just showed up when he needed them. He's out there on the pier. He's trying to get an ant ride. And the birds keep eating his ants. And he goes, "Oh, sorry, little dude," you know.
I think that went on a little too long.
Yeah, it went on about 2 or 3 times too many times.
Like, I get it.
And birds like ants. Yeah, got it.
But no, they used it for, like, a couple things where, like, they interrupted, like, the electricity and that one thing. And
I'm not saying they didn't do anything. I'm just saying they seemed very much... more there was essential.
There was really no emotional connection like there was in the first one with Anthony.
Right.
Because when Anthony died in the first one, you're like, aw.
But my point is that in this one, the fact that he's called Ant-Man's got much more to do with his size than the fact that he controls ants.
Yeah.
And in the first one, it was both. Not only is he small, but he has control of ants. He can make ants do what he wants to do.
Well, basically, I think for most of it, wasn't Hank doing most of the controlling anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I don't know what the deal with, like, the Altoids was either. It's like, can I have one of those? No.
Right.
Can I get one of those? No.
Well, didn't he have a suit in there or something? What was it? See, I forget I now.
I think he did.
Yeah. I think he had a costume in there or something. But anyway, so there was that. But overall, it was good. I liked Lawrence Fishburne in it. I'd like to see him more involved in maybe a sequel. I thought he was a good character.
Yeah, of course he wants to be Goliath in the next one.
Yeah, they actually suit up. Yeah,
of course he does.
You're very roundish shaped now, but
no. What I'm saying is, like, it's another actor saying, "Yeah, I want to do this." Okay, good. Doesn't mean you're going to.
Right.
I want $1 million. Doesn't mean it's ever gonna. I'm ever gonna have.
Well, Lawrence Fishburne is rocking the side level characters in the DC and Marvel movies. I mean, he's Perry White in one universe, and he's Bill Foster in another universe. It's just pretty cool. So, all right, now you were very impressed with this ghost character.
Yeah.
What was it about her that you liked? As far as just the way the character worked on screen, or the actress's performance, or both, or what?
I kind of like both.
Okay. I've not seen her in anything. Is she from anything?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I didn't recognize her.
I mean, I think she's British, so it would probably be...
Yeah, if we were better podcasters, we would know her name, but...
I could look it up, but it would take a couple minutes.
Yeah, so it's not worth it. But she was good in the role. I enjoyed her a lot. She was very convincing. As someone who seemed desperate, she pulled that off.
To get
off.
What she wanted, yeah.
Yeah.
Because she had to, like, kind of figure out, like, how to get things done without crossing that line for Bill to help her. Because she really needed Bill to help her cure her.
Right. So something we've not addressed is Hope. You know, she didn't really get featured in the movie last time as far as action scenes and stuff. Here she's heavily featured in this movie in the action scenes as the Wasp. Did it seem like they overdid it with her? Like she's too good? Or does that feel about right to you?
Because
she comes out of nowhere.
She took it more seriously than Hank did.
I mean, I guess theoretically,
Scott did.
Theoretically, she's been training to do this her whole life, so maybe she would be that good. But from an audience standpoint, this is a character you've not seen in a fight at all, and suddenly she's better at it than Scott is. So,
well, that's the thing. Scott's there for the comedic part,
right?
So you got to get someone who's there who can do the action stuff. Which is a very weird dynamic.
Right. But she's good in the role. I enjoy her. And her and Scott, or her and Paul Rudd, have a lot of chemistry on screen together. They seem to work well together. So I liked it. Michael Douglas is great as Hank Pym. He's one of the most enjoyable aspects of the movie. He's like the crotchety old man at this point. And every time he gets aggravated, he's yelling at Scott about this or that or whatever. So it's very funny. All right, so overall the show was good. I enjoyed it. Charlie, you liked it?
It was all right, like I said.
Was it better than the first or about the same?
No.
No, you don't think so?
I think the first one was better.
I thought the first one had
I think there's more emotional connection the first one. Even though his daughter, I think, is better than this one than she was in the first one.
Right.
Because I like the fact that she's like, oh, I want to be your sidekick, Daddy, or, you know, I want to help you when I grow up.
Well, she's a couple years older, and I think she's just maturing as an actress, and so she's doing a little better.
Well, which I think is funny because the rumor mill says that they've hired an older girl to play Cassie Lang.
Really?
In the
next one?
In another movie, in the whatever comes next.
Right.
So I don't know if it's going to be in Ant-Man and the Wasp Avengers 4 or whatever.
Huh. Well, maybe it's a time displace.
Because, but we don't know. But that's what I'm saying, because they, in the Young Avengers, she was their person.
Shrinking person.
Shrink size. She's known by stature.
Ah, okay. Excellent. All right, so...
And there's a...
Like there said, there probably will be another one. This movie did well enough at the box office. I think we'll probably get another one. And it's a fun movie. You know, all of the Marvel movies tend to take themselves very seriously, with the exception of Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy, not so much. Even though Guardians of the Galaxy was important because it played a lot into the Infinity War stuff leading up to it, but Guardians of the Galaxy was very much more tongue-in-cheek. But you take movies like Iron Man, Captain America, Civil War, all that stuff is super, uber serious. And then you take a movie like this, it's a lot more popcorn fun. And so I think it maybe the Marvel Universe needs a movie like this to offset the brooding that goes on in some of the other movies. So, anything to add to that?
I was trying to see, like, what the...
What that actress's name?
Well, I know what her name is. It's Hannah John Kamen.
Hannah John Kamen.
She's, like, yeah, she's been in a bunch of stuff.
Just stuff we didn't recognize.
Yeah, like Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Oh, really? Somebody standing around on the side or something?
Dark Souls 2.
Oh, that's a video game.
Dark Souls, she was in the first one. She was in Ready Player One.
Oh, okay.
She was also in Tomb Raider. But most of the rest of the stuff she was in was all British stuff.
Yeah.
No, I was trying to see like how much they made the movie for.
Oh. Well, while you're looking that up, let's talk just briefly about post-credit scenes. So we got two.
The first one was important. The other one was...
It was not.
A waste of time.
And Marvel's got so it does that. Marvel will have a post-credit scene.
It's not all the time.
No, but I mean, it started with Avengers, the first Avengers. That was the first post-credit scene that didn't matter. It just... They went and had shawarma. Okay? It was just jokey. And it didn't matter.
Wasn't there two in that one, too?
No, that was it. You waited, because there was no mid-credit sequence after the flashy credits, but before the black screen credits, there was no credit mid-credit scene. So you waited all the way through the end of that just to see them sitting there with Captain America's hand on his face because he didn't want you to see the beard, because he was filming something else at the time.
I don't know what, because I've never seen anything else that he was in that came out after that.
But... So after that, they've got, so they do two, and not in every movie, but in a lot of their movies, they do two post-credit scenes. They do a mid-credit scene after the flashy, colorful credits, and then another one after the black screen credits, okay? So I'll point out, for example, in Thor Ragnarok. Thor Ragnarok, you after the mid-credit scene, after the flashy credits, you get... Thanos, you get Thor and everybody standing around the ship trying to figure out where they're going to go when all of a sudden Thanos' ship pops up in front of them. That was important. Then you get the post-credit scene at the end of it, and it's...
Jeff Goldblum, Grandmaster.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum. I had, for whatever reason, Malcolm was popping in my head. That's not his name in this movie. Jeff Goldblum was going, a good revolt, everybody. We'll call it a tie. Very good, very happy. We'll do it again. Yeah. And so it was just a big funny thing, and it didn't matter. So that's what it seems like they've got, so they do anymore, is the important mid credit scene and the jokey post credit scene. And that's what we got this time.
Well, it was greatly done better in Spider-Man, I think, where he gets the upgraded suit and he's dealing with the spider thing and like learning all that crap, and then at the end where like it's Captain America, patience. You need to have patience.
So you've decided to try drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like I said, that seems to be their flaw. So in this one, the mid-credit scene we get is Scott goes down into the quantum universe because he's got to get some of that quantum energy because this ghost character apparently needs that, like medicine, to keep her stable.
Yeah.
And so he goes in there to the quantum realm to collect some of that quantum energy, and he's waiting on Hank and the rest of them to pull him out, and he's talking to him on the microphone, and suddenly they go, they're gone. He can't get them anymore, and he flashes up to the surface level, and they're turned to ash. Yeah. So now the movie has officially caught up to... excuse me. Oh, sneeze out of nowhere. The movie has officially caught up to Infinity War, and when Thanos snaps his finger in Wakanda, Hank and Hope and Janet, all three. You know, it's supposed to be one out of every two people. All three of those people turn into ash.
Well, it's just half the people.
Right, and so there's three other people somewhere that didn't. I get you. But the odds of it, you know, three people right together, and you didn't, not even one of them made it. So, but now the question is whether or not he didn't get turned into ash because he's one of the people that wouldn't have gotten to turn into ash anyway, or if he didn't get turned into ash because he was in the quantum realm, and in that realm, Thanos' snap doesn't have any effect on him because he's outside of normal time and space. I tend to think that's the answer. The question is, now that he's there, he's stuck there. There's nobody to pull him out.
That was the first Thanos at the end of Avengers.
Oh, was there a mid-credit scene?
Yeah.
Okay. You spent all that time looking at that to see if I was right or wrong? Yes. Good job, Charlie. Good use of your time.
Yes, it was.
All right, so I was wrong. It happens. But now he's stuck in the quantum realm. There's nobody to pull him out. So that will take you to the next Avengers movie because from what I understand, I think he's supposed to be in it. So how does he get out?
There's a bunch of people supposed to be in it.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
But they could fool us like they did with Infinity War shooting scenes.
With Hulk that wasn't in it and stuff like that. Sure.
Or Jeremy Renner who wasn't in it at all.
Right. So your last and your post-credit scene, the one at the very end of the credits, is just...
The ant playing
the drums back at his house.
Because in the movie they told Scott that they brought an ant in there who could
mimic his day-to-day movements.
Yeah.
So the ant does everything that he does through the whole...
And apparently one thing that he did every day was play the
little drum electronic set. Drum set that's just a little rubber pads. Yeah. So that was
which it. You see that in the credit. Well, you see it in the movie, so it's not really a spoiler.
Yeah. Yeah, but the idea is that they forgot about the ant. Yeah. And the ant's still running around the house doing that. So. All right.
I kind of thought it was funny the way they kept, like, screwing around with Jimmy Woo the whole time.
Right.
It's just like, hey, Scott Lang, you are under arrest, blah, blah, blah. And he wasn't even in the suit. Like,
right.
Like,
well, I mean, when you see Giant Man on TV doing things, and you know it's Scott. Yeah. But you go to Scott's house, and somehow Scott's got back to his house, and he's like, what? Can I help you guys? So you can't prove it was him, but you know it was.
Yeah.
So all Jimmy Woo can say at the end of it is, I'll be watching you. Just, I'll be seeing you. And he went like, what? Seeing me when? You mean like later today? You inviting me to dinner? He goes, well, no. Why? Do you want to go to dinner?
Like I said, I kind of like the direction of Jimmy. I thought he was kind of funny.
Yeah, he could end up being an ally of some kind in the future or something.
Well, like I said, that whole Agents Atlas thing.
Right.
But I doubt they're going to do the
8th. No, I don't think
that. As they're going to supposedly be doing this Eternals movie.
Yeah. All right. So that, you know, we liked it well enough. If you missed it in the theaters, but you're thinking about buying it on video, I recommend it. Or if it's still playing where you're at and you want to go see it, it's definitely worth the $5 or $8 or whatever to go see it. All right. We'll be back in just a second to close the show out. You guys sit tight.
I was partners with Hank on a project called Goliath.
How big did you get?
My record, 21 feet. You?
65 feet.
65.
If you two are finished comparing sizes...
65.
All New Reality, the comic book podcast. We're happy to have been with you tonight sharing our thoughts on Ant-Man and the Wasp. We hope that if you got to saw the movie, you enjoyed it as much as we did. And if you have thoughts that contradict or confirm what Charlie and I thought, we would love to hear from you
about
that.
Don't be still, my friend, as we were.
Charlie's like, that's copyrighted as of right now. Huffman Properties Incorporated, something, something. So send us your email. We want to hear from you. If you do so, you know, I mean, you can tweet us, you can Facebook us, but I'm not going to read that stuff on the air. If you send us an email, I'll read that on the air, and then you'll be like famous for 30 seconds for however many people listen to the show. So send us the email at alternaterealitypodcast@gmail.com. We will read and respond to your mail at some future point. Go to our website, arnetcast.podomatic.com, where you can find new episodes of the show that go up all the time. And or you can subscribe in your podcatching service, whether it be Stitcher or Google Play or iTunes. Oh, by the way, if you find us on iTunes, write a review. We would appreciate that. Go over and say nice things about us and give us a 5-star rating. That helps increase our visibility. That's super nice. We'd appreciate if you would do that. And watch for us on the social networking. We do hang out on there from time to time. Twitter.com is where me and Charlie are at a lot of the time. My handle is at John Loveless. No H in my name, just John Loveless. JonLoveless. All one word. No periods, no spaces, no underscores. Charlie's is X Onslaught, which is just like it sounds. At X, the word Onslaught, which is both an actual word and a comic book character's name. And then you can check out the show at Twitter handle at AR, short for All in Reality, AR underscore podcast. And subscribe to that or follow that feed for the show if you want to stay up to date on what's happening with the Alden and Reality podcast. We're on the Facebook. Search for us over there. Alden and Reality has a Facebook page. And Charlie and I are on the Facebook. You can friend us. And if, you know, unless you look creepy or something, we'll probably friend you back. And comics, Alden and Reality is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. Check out the network at Comics with an S, Podcast with an S, Comics Podcast, double plural, .com. Anything to add to that, Charlie?
No.
All right, then. It's been a long night for us because we've recorded 2 shows together. We're going to leave you now and talk to you next week, where we'll be talking about more comics, and in the weeks to come, perhaps other movie reviews. So until next time, and in the meantime, my name is John.
I'm Charlie.
And we are out. You guys have a good night. Cut.